Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Yeah, Rick Perry had his problems last night, but he did himself in. He didn't even get asked the toughest question of the evening. How you gonna fix Europe? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by FreshBooks, an online invoicing service for small businesses designed to help save time, get paid fast, and make invoicing easy. More at FreshBooks.com. And by MassMutual, offering business owners financial guidance for the long term. Information at MassMutual.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ruzdahl. It's Thursday, today the 10th of November. Good to have you with us. And let's admit right at the outset that if there was an easy answer to the European debt crisis, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. George Papandreou would still be the Prime Minister of Greece, and Silvio Berlusconi wouldn't be in quite so much trouble. So you can cut GOP presidential candidates some slack for their non-answers to the very first question at the CNBC debate last night. Herman Cain, Mitt Romney, and Ron Paul, you're about to hear them in that order, on what they would do about Italy.
We must assure that our currency is sound, just like a dollar must be a dollar when we wake up in the morning. Just like 60 minutes is in an hour, a dollar must be a dollar.
Europe is able to take care of their own problems. We don't want to step in and try and bail out their banks and bail out their governments.
If you don't liquidate this and clear the market, believe me, you're going to perpetuate this for a decade or two more, and that is very, very dangerous.
I'm pretty sure he's talking about liquidating the Italian economy right there. You can't be sure. But it's not like the Democrats have any bright ideas either. Here's the Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, a couple of days ago, and then his boss with non-answers to essentially the same question.
Again, we have a big stake in helping Europe manage through these things, and we're going to do it in a way that's sensible for the American economy, the American taxpayer.
If Europe isn't growing, it's harder for us to do what we need to do for the American people, creating jobs, lifting up the middle class, and putting our fiscal house in order. And that's why I've made it clear that the United States will continue to do our part to support our European partners as they work to resolve this crisis.
Yeah, so finally, Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Fed, appointed by a Republican, it must be said, reappointed by a Democrat, speaking today down in Rick Perry country, Fort Bliss, Texas.
I don't think we would be able to escape the consequences of a blow-up in Europe.
There was, in all honesty, not a whole lot going on in Europe today. Greece has a new interim prime minister. The Italians did manage to sell off €5 billion worth of bonds at a not too terrible interest rate. That's honestly about it. Back here, State College, Pennsylvania is still trying to sort out all that happened last night. Joe Paterno was fired. The president of Penn State was allowed to resign. Students rioted, and trustees are trying to limit the damage and figure out where they go from here. Marketplace's Gregory Warner has more now from Philadelphia.
Joe Paterno and other superstar football coaches are not just coaches.
They aren't coaches. They are their own brands. They are basically the university's top business development officer, the top salesperson.
David Carter directs the Sports Business Institute at USC. Penn State football brought in $53 million after expenses, second only to the University of Texas in profits. But Joe Paterno, the brand, was worth much more. And his football program, at least until last week, was scandal-free.
This pristine brand run by someone who is respected on a national level, who also won consistently, those are the kinds of things that you can build a fundraising program around. And now, going forward, the extent to which that has been compromised will play out over time.
Buzz Bissinger is a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer and the author of Friday Night Lights, a book about a town and its obsession with high school football. He says as much as Joe Paterno swelled the coffers of Penn State, he also overshadowed the school's true worth.
The fact of the matter is Penn State is an extremely good school academically, but you go outside of Pennsylvania and you ask people, what do you know about Penn State? Joe Paterno. It sucks from the rest of the school.
Bissinger hopes that this scandal might even be an opportunity. Imagine the university becoming more famous for its Nobel laureates than its touchdowns. But rebranding a half century of Paterno will be hard. As the man himself once famously said, it's not the name on the back of the jersey that matters. It's the name on the front. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
You go to work for a startup in Silicon Valley, and one of the unspoken perks, actually, it's spoken quite a bit, is a chance to get rich off of stock options, which makes a development at the social gaming company Zynga. They invented Farmville. A little bit curious. Zynga could go public for as much as $20 billion later this year, but company founders are said to be having some regrets about handing out options so freely back in the early days. The Wall Street Journal reports they're making employees an offer that's kind of tough to refuse. Give everything back or lose your job. Marketplace's Steve Henn has more.
The lure of stock options is one of the biggest reasons so much talent still flows into tiny little startups.
In a startup, you often take a reduced salary in exchange for an equity share. And the promise is that if things work out, then you're rewarded, sometimes disproportionately, for the risk you took. And if it doesn't work out, then you made a bad bet and you go get a different job.
Adam Tratz, the CEO of a small gaming startup called Giant Thinkwell. He's gotten options at other companies in the past, and he's giving them out now at his own company. But the idea that a firm could claw back stock options on the eve of a blockbuster IPO is almost unheard of.
You know, without knowing the explicit details of what's going on, it seems a little bit outrageous that Zynga would be trying to change the rules right on the eve of the big payout.
And Zynga's refusing to comment. But security experts in Silicon Valley say most stock options require employees to work at a company for a year or two before the options vest. So if an employee is not performing, managers can simply fire them and they'll lose everything. What's different at Zynga is that instead of simply firing poor performers, employees were given a choice. They could give back some of their shares or lose their jobs. That strikes Sean Hector, an engineer here in the Valley, as bogus.
You can't have your cake and eat it, too. I mean, you can't draw all these people here with the stock options and then say, oh, well, now, you know, I didn't think that you actually, you know, did a good job, so I'm going to take half of them away. I just don't, you know, that doesn't work.
But these kinds of clawbacks are becoming more common. Silver Lake, a private equity firm that owned Skype, pushed that company to fire a number of executives after Microsoft bought it, allegedly to avoid a payout. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, you know, given the way things are going, pretty good, actually. All three major indices took heart from a day of no further bad news from the continent. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Now, here's something you probably haven't heard in a while. Environmentalists win, big oil loses. The topic at hand is something called the Keystone XL pipeline, woulda run from Canada down to Texas in the Gulf of Mexico. I say woulda because even though it's been in the works for years, late today the State Department said it's going to put off a decision on final approval, conveniently till after next year's election, most likely. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong has the latest.
This is Back to the Drawing Board Part 3 for a decision on the pipeline to carry 800,000 barrels of Canadian crude oil per day to the U.S. This time, the administration wants to modify the pipeline route to protect a critical underwater aquifer in Nebraska. Assistant Secretary of State Carrie Ann Jones.
And we are looking at a route that we didn't look at before, but which we need to look at and do more analysis of because of what we have been hearing.
The regulatory do-over will take more than a year. And delay means victory for an environmental movement that staged a White House protest Sunday, roping in the likes of Robert Redford and Daryl Hannah. Susan Casey Lefkowitz at the Natural Resource Defense Council says it's clear the president himself responded to the protests.
The president is listening to the many Americans who have voiced concern about climate change as they've marched in Washington, D.C., grandmothers from Vermont, and teachers and professors from North Carolina, almost 15,000 strong.
The issue is Canadian oil sands, which takes a lot of energy to extract, so it emits 17% more carbon. For the industry, analyst David Yeager in Calgary says today's news is a blow. As the decision came, oil investment dollars got nervous.
You know, the projects that are penned in to start, say, next year, I'm told that these are already under review if this pipeline isn't going to be built on time, if ever.
Still, what's not clear is whether delaying a pipeline means the end of Canadian crude. Yeager says there are other ways to get it out, rail, existing pipelines, trucks. So long as the price of oil stays high enough, there will always be a plan B, C, D, E, and F. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Final details on new fuel economy standards for cars and trucks are due out next week. Probably should have said tough new standards, because the White House is proposing 35.5 miles a gallon by 2016, 54.5 miles a gallon by 2025. Eventually, electric cars are going to turn gas pumps into museum pieces. But Sarah Gardner reports now from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, news of the death of the internal combustion engine has been greatly exaggerated.
That's the almost dainty sound of a Chevy, the same General Motors brand that brought us the macho Corvette and the supersized Suburban. But the Chevy Cruze Eco is all about economy, fuel economy.
42 mpg and over 500 highway miles a tank. Fuel up, rock on.
The Eco may even get over 50 miles per gallon if you drive this mid-size sedan like your grandmother. Dave Cole, chairman emeritus of the Center for Automotive Transportation, says it's like that old Clairol commercial. Gasoline engines aren't getting older. They're just getting better.
We have a lot of new technology that is emerging.
Automakers say they'll meet the 2016 fuel standard mostly by selling lighter, more aerodynamic cars with smarter engines.
So every gram matters.
That's Sam Weingarten. He's GM's engine guru.
The lighter it gets, the less energy it takes to move, it all works in your favor.
Weingarten's not just talking about the 100-plus pounds GM shaved off the Eco by using lighter wheels and other parts. He's also talking about the car's engine. All the automakers are now downsizing under the hood.
In a downsized engine, you have a smaller displacement. The amount of volume of air that the cylinders take...
Hold your horsepower. Let's just say car makers are moving towards the little engine that could. Smaller, lighter gas engines, power boosted by little devices called turbochargers. Steve McKinley, an engineering exec at Honeywell Turbo Technologies, says right now that describes only 10% of cars sold in North America. But by 2025,
you could see as much as 80% of the vehicles being turbocharged. So a pretty broad-ranging impact in order to meet future fuel economy goals.
Turbocharged small engines are common in Europe, and it's just one of the tricks up Detroit's fuel-saving sleeve. GM's Weingarten says carmakers are also tinkering with the internal combustion process.
How efficiently do we burn the fuel-air mixture?
They're also lowering the suspension on cars to reduce drag.
So it's easier to push that car down the road.
They're installing easier rolling tires, too, and devices that automatically shut off the engine when it's idling in traffic, although they admit some drivers balk at that one in test trials.
And it's like, no, you're fine. Everything's cool. It's going to start. It'll go, but you got to get people used to that.
Car makers are even dumping the spare tire in some models to save gas. Together, these kind of refinements mean squeezing maybe 25% more fuel efficiency out of the internal combustion engine. Any more? Small startups are working on it with radical new engine designs. But achieving that 54-mile-per-gallon standard, that means selling lots more clean diesels, hybrids, and electric cars, which now account for just a tiny slice of yearly sales.
So you're going to see a lot of emphasis on the internal combustion engine for a number of years.
Regulators will revisit the new fuel standards in 2019. If electric cars and hybrids haven't caught fire with consumers by then, Washington may apply the brakes on that 54 mpg rule. And if a Republican wins the White House next year, some say that could happen sooner. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Coming up, part two of our series on the business of Chinese kids getting into U.S. colleges.
It's an open secret in higher education that credentials from China need to be looked at very closely.
But first, let's do the numbers. Signs the Eurozone will stay intact, at least for now, lured investors back into stocks. The Dow Industrials climbed 112 points, a little less than 1%, reached 11,893. The Nasdaq edged up 3 points, just 0.1%, 26.25. The number... The S&P 500 rose 10 points, more than 0.75%, finished things at 1239. Media conglomerate Viacom posted better-than-expected quarterly earnings, largely due to the success of this summer's Transformer movie, which is funny because I don't think it was that good. Shares flipped up more than 5% today. I guess you can only go back to the coffee pot so many times. Starbucks announced plans to open a chain of juice bars. Really? After buying a California juice company for $30 million, shares perked up 1.33%. Bonds slid. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.06%. It's amazing what you learn in the numbers. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. By the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And by Money Magazine's Take Charge Live, a series of events designed to help you take charge of your finances. November 16th at Boston College. Registration at moneytakecharge.com. If you missed the broadcast, you can still catch Marketplace. Go to our website and click on Podcasts. You'll also find our new podcasts, The Midday Update, Freakonomics, and The Tech Report, all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's happening Friday. Events at Arlington National Cemetery and around the country mark Veterans Day. Need another Harry Potter DVD to complete your collection? Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 is released for home viewing tomorrow. And its official state flower is the rhododendron. And it's the only state named for a president. Washington joined the Union on November 11, 1889. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. We've got about 2 weeks until what has somehow become the traditional start of the holiday shopping season. It is, of course, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, as it's called. And if you follow these things, you probably know a lot of retailers are starting their big markdowns at midnight that Friday, which, if you still want it to be Friday, would seem to be the earliest possible start time, yes? No. Today, Walmart said, I'll see your midnight and raise you 10 p.m. Black Friday deals are going to start at Walmart on Thursday this year, as in Thanksgiving. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports now on what's becoming a very busy graveyard shift.
Dev Shapiro is one of those shoppers who camps out for about a week to be the first in line.
Yeah, I've been doing Thanksgiving in the parking lot of Best Buy for the last 8 years.
He's also the spokesman for a Black Friday sale tracker, gotadeal.com.
Let me bring up my list here.
At 10 p.m. on Thanksgiving, some Walmart clothes, toys, and housewares go on sale.
At midnight, Best Buy, Kohl's, Macy's, Shopko, Target.
Okay, we got to speed this up. He's got more than 20 stores on the list.
And then at 9 a.m., it's the last store that opens. It's Lazy Boy.
Appropriate. Retail strategist John Long of the firm Kurt Salmon says stores open earlier every year for a good reason.
Because to some degree, the only growth that retailers are seeing in the marketplace today is growth off the backs of competitors.
And while he says the day after Thanksgiving may represent 1% of annual sales for many retailers,
Black Friday isn't necessarily their biggest shopping day.
More likely, it's in the top five. Analyst Anthony Chikumba of BB&T Capital Markets says that's because a lot of consumers cherry-pick the best deals.
People go into the stores, you know, just looking to get that $299 42-inch LCD TV. And once they have their hands on that, you know, they don't really buy anything else.
So why open early?
It's for the publicity. It's create a frenzy. It's create excitement.
Ah, I guess I was kind of part of that today. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Yesterday on the program, Rob Schmitz, our correspondent in Shanghai, took us inside what you might fairly call the Chinese education industry, about the lengths that parents go to over there to get their kids, their only kids, into American colleges and universities. It's a good-sized cottage industry of companies that write essays and recommendation letters and provide fake transcripts, all to get a foot in the schoolhouse door. Today, some of the customers of those agencies, the Chinese students and the universities that recruit them. From our education desk at WYPR, Marketplace's Amy Scott picks up the story.
Imagine growing up in Shanghai, one of the largest cities in the world, and landing here, Stevens Point, in the middle of Wisconsin, population 25,000.
What can I get for you?
Just black tea.
Black tea?
Yeah.
And hot one or ice?
Latte.
Yeah.
I met Ye Shengming at a Starbucks in Stevens Point. He goes by Eldon.
I just look up in the dictionary and find it randomly. Yeah.
Eldon is 21. He came here to study accounting at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. In China, high school students take a single test that determines where they go to college. Here, there are tests and essays and recommendation letters and transcripts. So, like thousands of Chinese families, Eldon's parents hired an agency that specializes in getting students into American schools. They paid the equivalent of about $5,000 to a company called Shanghai Shenyuan to help him with his applications.
Because this agency did this job for quite long years, so I think they can make sure you can go abroad or not.
As we reported out of Shanghai yesterday, the methods Chinese agencies use to get students into U.S. schools are not always honest. We spoke to two former employees from Shanghai Shenyuan who told us they routinely got high schools to falsify students' grades. The agents said they made up students' reference letters and wrote their essays for them.
I usually just made them up using my own ideas. Sometimes I'd browse the internet or read magazines for inspiration.
That former agent asked us not to use her name for fear of losing her job. Eldon says he wrote his own application, but other Chinese students told me it's common for agencies to fake application materials.
You just give them the list of schools you're interested, and they will do it for you.
Fu Ying goes by Cherie. She's a sophomore communication major at UW-Stevens Point. Cherie also says she wrote everything herself, though she hired an agency to help.
They are not ashamed of doing this. You pay them and they get it out for you.
Chinese parents aren't the only ones paying the agencies. American universities often pay them commissions for the students they send here. The University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point runs an English as a second language program. The program paid Shanghai Shenyuan about $700 for Eldon. Some schools pay much more. After he passed a few ESL courses, he enrolled in the university.
As an institution, we have a plan to dramatically increase our enrollment. We're looking to, over the next 5 years, double our number of international degree-seeking undergraduates.
Brad Vandenelsen is director of the International Students and Scholars Office at UW-Stevens Point. He says foreign students bring diversity to the campus. They also bring money. And with states gutting education budgets, universities need new sources of revenue.
Non-resident tuition payers, whether they're from Illinois or Iowa or Indonesia, contribute to that revenue stream.
Today, there are about 130 Chinese students on campus out of a total of 9,500 students. 6 years ago, there were just 12. But paying commissions for students raises ethical questions. It's illegal to recruit American students that way. When I told Vandenelsen about the questionable credentials coming out of Shanghai Shenyuan, he wasn't entirely surprised.
It's an open secret in higher education that credentials from China need to be looked at very closely. I'm disappointed to hear that from our friends at Shanghai Shenyuan. We all have to do our due diligence.
Stevens Point promptly ended its partnership with Shanghai Shenyuan. The former employees of the agency said they didn't fake applications for students at UW-Stevens Point. The university has relatively easy admission standards, so they sent their worst students there. Vandenelsen investigated and found that, in fact, more than 15% of students from Shenyuan had been suspended from the university for bad grades. Just 3% of all international students flunk out in a given year.
Those students would be on the lower end of the admission scale as a group, but we find that most of them are able to be successful.
The former agents say they did fabricate applications for students who got into several American universities.
The Ohio State University, Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, Michigan State University,
None of those schools pay commissions to Shenyuan for students. Officials at all four told Marketplace they're aware of this type of fraud. Downing Thomas is dean of international programs at the University of Iowa. He says the university recently dismissed four Chinese students for credential fraud.
We're doing everything we can to ensure that the students who come to campus are ones who belong here.
But it can be hard to know when a student has worked with an agent. And admissions officials point out that American students get substantial help with their applications, too. Jim Miller is former president of the National Association for College Admission Counseling. The group is considering banning its members from paying commissions.
We can couch our phrases with our interest in having greater cultural engagement on campus, and that is important. But it's the revenue push that pushes it, and we have to be careful not to make decisions that are based on short-term gain that have longer-term implications.
College officials say, by and large, Chinese students are succeeding at American schools. At UW-Stevens Point, Eldon is aware his middle-class parents paid a lot of money to send him here.
They gave me this opportunity to study abroad. I need to, like, not just waste money.
Eldon says he's a mediocre student. He'd rather play computer games or guitar than study. But last semester, he did pretty well, a 3.7 GPA out of 4. He's hoping to do better this semester so he can transfer to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In Stevens Point, Wisconsin, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On our website, we've got some snapshots of the students Amy talked to and a blog by Rob Schmitz from Shanghai. It's at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Innocentive, solving important problems for business, government, and foundations by connecting them to problem solvers from around the world. Innocentive.com, where the world innovates. By Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the internet. Reputation.com. And by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today about the GOP debate and what markets can tell us about ourselves. There is an active market in who's going to win the Republican nomination online at Intrade. It's an exchange of sorts in which people bet on outcomes, be it an athletic contest or a political one. So anyway, before his brain freeze last night, Rick Perry was at 8% on Intrade, meaning the market thought he had an 8% chance of winning the nomination. Right afterward, down to 4% for forgetting what he was going to say. That's worse odds than Herman Cain had. All right, that's it. That's Marketplace from APM, American Public Media, on this Thursday. Today, the Dow perked up 112 points, a little less than 1%. The Nasdaq edged up 3 points, just about a tenth percent. The S&P 500 up 10 points, more than 0.75%. Ben Adair, John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Jonathan Karp, Betsy Streisand, Lisa Tucker, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Coming up next time on the broadcast, the multidisciplinary approach to the European crisis.
The EU, first and foremost, is really a political project that's wrapped up in a kind of an economic brand.
Oh, so that's what's going on. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Do hope you can join us back here for that tomorrow. This is APM, that's American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.